Thank you for that. The Chamber of Minerals and Energy, for those that you are unaware, is the peak resources focused member organisation here in Western Australia. We have over 150 members, of which about 70 of those are production companies who extract or mine almost every commodity that's available here in WA. CME has a vision, and that vision is that the community and the government understand the importance of the resources sector to the state, and that both the community and the government actually become advocates for our growth and sustainability. To achieve this, though, there are some key things that need to occur. There are some fundamental objectives that need to be met. These include things like responsible use of FIFO as a workforce practice, having engaged communities who contribute and inform industry on a wide range of issues, that there is social infrastructure provided by the government and is supported by industry, and that there are partnerships that support sustained regional development. As everyone in this room would be aware, the resources sector makes a significant contribution to both the WA and Australian economies. WA accounts for 50% of Australia's total value in mineral production and petroleum sales. In 2007, the estimated value of the WA minerals and petroleum industry reached $53.1 billion. This represented a 7% increase compared to the previous year, up from $28.4 billion in 2003 and only $5.2 billion in 85 and 86. So the resource sector, with all of its fluctuations, has been a long-term growth story for the state. The resources sector is required to pay royalties to both the state and Commonwealth governments. So the payment of royalties in the main are percentage-based, and as commodity price rises and volume rise, government income correspondingly rises as well. So in 2007-2008, state royalties from the resources sector were in the order of $2.3 billion paid. As Sue has indicated already in her presentation, just under 50% of employees in the resources sector work on FIFO arrangements. This results in an average of 70 flights from the Perth airport on a daily basis, leaving to go to the regions, which I'm sure that comes as no surprise to any of you in the room who have had to be at the airport at any time between 5 and 7 o'clock in the morning and have been caught on the tarmac because your plane's missed that slot. Today's session focuses on the Pilbara, and it's important to note the economic contribution of the Pilbara region. It's clearly the powerhouse of the economy and accounts for 63% of the value of the WA minerals and energy production in 2007. It's the primary resource producing region and the catalyst for the economic conditions that we've been experiencing over the last couple of years. Data provided to the Chamber relating to 2006 demonstrates that a minimum of $7 billion was contributed by companies in the Pilbara region to the Commonwealth Government in royalties and company and taxes, such as company income tax. In this same period, an additional $1.6 billion was paid to the state government by companies operating in the Pilbara region, again for royalties and taxes. So all up, this equates to $8.6 billion that was contributed by the Pilbara region into both state and Commonwealth coffers. These monies go into consolidated revenue for distribution as part of the normal government budgeting processes. Where I'm going to take you in the presentation is to paint a picture of what has been done and is being done to try and get an understanding of the issues that are happening in the Pilbara region related to its growth. I'm then going to briefly canvass with you some of the activities that are happening to look at how we can commence resolving those issues. There'd been a need identified to undertake joint planning for major growth in the output of the resources sector in the Pilbara over the period of 2015 to 2020. The intent of this was to broaden the understanding of the implications of this growth for service and infrastructure provision arising from employment and population changes in the region. Existing available data points to large differences in the Pilbara between the estimated resident population and the actual numbers of people utilising services such as water, waste treatment and transport. PIC, Pilbara Industries Community Council, which I'll cover off in a bit more detail in a moment, decided that there was a need to compile a bottom-up picture of major planned and potential resource projects. And to develop a model, and the model resulted in using direct and multiplier impacts on the Pilbara employment and population growth out to 2020. Again, unsurprisingly, Pilbara iron ore shipments are underpinning the employment and population projections, and they total some 700 million tonnes a year from 2015 to 2020. This is at the lower end of the potential capacity for iron ore projects known to be under consideration. And these figures were adopted to address the uncertainty around timing, scale and market demand. Applying the multiplier assumptions to resident employment numbers, it suggests that the Pilbara's population could reach over 45,000 in 2010 and exceed 50,000 in 2015. To give you some kind of context, the 2006 census figure indicate that that population at the moment is 41,000. As a cautionary note, I guess the further out the projections go, the more uncertainty there is with regards to the evolution of the projects and hence the potential employment impacts. So these are intended to, be treated as an illustrative manner. Total resource-related employment in the Pilbara is projected to go from 15,000 to above 30,000 in 2015 onwards. The totals that you can see on the screen, or I hope you can see on the screen, include local jobs required to support direct employment in the Pilbara and FIFO operations. Residential employment is projected to increase from 10,000 to 15,000 in 2015. However, FIFO is projected to grow at a faster rate, rising from 5,000 to potentially 17,000 in 2015. These numbers reflect current company judgments on how and where staff will be deployed as operations expand or contract. Sue has canvassed with you some reasons why individuals choose to do FIFO, financial being one of them. Other research that has been done has indicated that individuals choose to do FIFO because they desire to choose where they live. They want to be able to work in the resources sector but live in an environment where they can still access all of the services such as education and health. From a company point of view, consideration in moving towards FIFO is in some instances, again, driven by the lack of access to services and communities that can support them, and in the main due to where there are residential communities close by, host communities, that there's a lack of housing within those communities. Depending on their location, FIFO workers can create a range of pressures on the Pilbara infrastructure and the services which need to be taken into account. We've already mentioned that iron ore projects are the dominant driver of operating employment in the Pilbara. By contrast, oil and gas projects tend to be very capital intensive, employing relatively fewer operating staff, but generating very high demands for construction workers, which often leads to a high utilisation of FIFO. FIFO employment rises from just under 5,000 to some 17,000 by 2015, and as indicated, and you can see up there, is that the iron ore projects generate the largest requirement for operational staff. To also help inform the understanding of the issue, the CME is currently undertaking a piece of work called the State Growth Outlook. CME identified that there was an opportunity for industry to be able to contribute to the state's planning information base by developing an integrated outlook and gap analysis on key inputs for growth, and those being people, energy and water, with a basis of the implications of the planned growth for industry for the state, so to be able to assist inform the state for them to be able to implement their state planning. Regional information, while this is a statewide project, regional information is also able to be extracted from this data. It's based on data that has been provided by member companies. And when we commenced this piece of work, it was certainly prior to the current global economic situation. So we're extending the piece of work to essentially overlay the impact of the Asian financial crisis on the resources sector to be able to get a sense of the potential impacts of recent circumstances. Government has assisted with this initiative in terms of guidance and input to ensure that the data that we were collecting had relevance to be able to inform their planning processes. The intended objective of us being able to collect this data was to be able to identify the projections in the enabling areas, to be able to identify the implications of the growth and impact on the quality of life, livability and the environment in Western Australia, and to be able to provide an input into government planning. I would have loved to have been able to give you a summary of this report, but given the additional piece of work that we're doing at the moment with overlaying the Asian financial crisis, that report's not quite available but is due imminently. In terms of resolving the issue of the projected employment and population growth in the Pilbara region, and I guess generally across Western Australia, there are a number of activities that are already happening. Companies are already making significant contributions to their local communities. Direct investment by PIC member companies, including but not limited to in the areas of education and health, in the Pilbara region, are estimated to be over $25 million as at January 2008. Companies, again, who are partners under the PIC, Pilbara Industries Community Council, contribute 470 dwellings in the region. So this is over and above the housing that they provide to their employees and their own staff, but an additional 470 dwellings to government, local business, contractors and community groups in recognition of the impact of the housing shortage in the region. Other examples of community company contributions to their communities include targeted education programs with specific schools, university scholarships, art awards. So there's a significant company contribution already occurring. CME is of the view that social infrastructure is a public good and that there is a responsibility on government to be able to provide that social infrastructure. These services are readily provided by government in other areas, and the question needs to be asked is why isn't it being provided in areas that are driving the economy? As Ken's already alluded to, there's a history of resource companies being expected to create and manage entire towns, and they've built a substantial amount of infrastructure already. Globally, there's an increase in the use of public and private partnerships, where there's the involvement of the private sector in the provision of goods and services traditionally provided and seen as a function of the public sector. This entails a shift in role of the public sector from buying to from supplying to actually buying services, with private firms designing, constructing, operating, and maintaining infrastructure, and the public sector paying for these services. In some areas, this is the public-private partnership is not what is occurring, that there's an expectation on resource companies that they will fill the gap for what is seen as a government responsibility without the public sector contributing to the payment for these services. CME supports true public and private partnerships and considers that it is the primary function of government to deliver social infrastructure, but that there is a role for industry to support that as well. We consider that it should not be the presumption from government and host communities that resource companies will continue to fill the gap. The question that Tom wanted me to answer, but I think is not an easy answer, is who actually pays, who is responsible for the delivery of social infrastructure. And as I indicated, that it needs to be, what is imperative is that the needs of the state, the individual and the enterprises all need to be met in those discussions and how we deliver social infrastructure. I've touched on PIC, the Pilbara Industries Community Council, on a couple of occasions, and PIC is an industry-led initiative, and it works in collaboration with the Australian and West Australian and local governments and the Pilbara communities to address two specific and interrelated priority outcomes. One is the development of a shared vision and strategy to increase Indigenous participation in the Pilbara region, including strategies to reduce gaps in education, training, health and housing, the areas that are seen to be key enablers for the region. And it's also to enable the development of a shared vision and strategy in relation to the sustainability of Pilbara towns. The PIC initiatives are intended to complement projects already underway in the Pilbara, are intended to try and pull together the individual company contributions that are being made in an attempt to get that shared vision and a shared way forward. So just in summary, I think there is now emerging is a clear understanding of what the issues and the potential growth and is going to be in the Pilbara region. There's now a substantial body of work in terms of how do we balance the use of FIFO, have FIFO be a responsible work practice while at the same time achieving the objectives of having sustainable regional hubs within Western Australia. Thank you.